this is testing. Now, in the statistics and data analysis classes I had, and when I was first learning about these techniques, I was working in a factory. And every day, the manufacturing engineering manager basically expected us to do an experiment every day. Now, setting up and running a hypothesis test became the go-to test for many of us because it allowed us to test a change to the process or a variation of the process or a difference or two different vendors very, very quickly. And we could show with some statistical rigor that something was different or not from something else. Sometimes it was better and sometimes it was worse, but every day we would run an experiment. Now, we didn't do a hypothesis test every day. Sometimes we would plan for and develop a design of an experiment, or we'd set up a control chart and do some calculations there. But it was a wonderful way to learn hypothesis testing because it was, in a factory, we had data all over the place. And we had, as many organizations have, is they have more data than they know what to do with. Well, running some basic hypothesis tests and setting up some what-if scenarios is a great way, one, to learn hypothesis testing and what it can do for you, but two, to actually make improvements in your operation. So in this section, we're going to talk about statistical comparisons. So it's basically the idea of I've got a set of data, a sample, basically, that we want to make an inference about a population, and we may have a specification, so we want to compare it to a standard or a spec of some sort, or some known value, or we want to compare two options or three options or some other number of options. And we want to say, does this treatment work better than another one? Does vendor A give us better yield results than vendor B? And so on. And we want to do it with some rigor so that we know that the difference that we see is likely to be very true rather than just a random chance. And that's what we're after here in the hypothesis testing, is making sure that we can understand that the differences we see are really there. So the basic idea is in the very simplest of ways of thinking of it, is I take a sample, I make some measurements or observations about that sample, and I'm going to infer something about the population. It's nothing different than creating a point estimate. It's just this, now I'm making a comparison in order to draw a conclusion. The basic process for hypothesis testing is pretty uniform, whether I'm dealing with attribute data or count data or variables data, or comparing two things or more than two things. But the basic idea is very similar to what you would consider, or I would consider, a basic scientific method. So the first one is really, well, what's the problem? What am I trying to do? If I'm trying to improve yield, then there's usually some current yield value we have and some reason why that is not good enough or not adequate or suitable. And that may be what the problem is, and I'm trying to move towards, in the yield case, to higher yields, for example. And so we create a hypothesis that basically says, I'm going to try something. I'm going to change settings on the equipment. And my theory is that it should make a difference, right? It should improve the yield of what I'm of my processing line. Now, is that the null hypothesis or is that the alternative hypothesis? Now, you can put it in either direction, but keep in mind, the null hypothesis is basically the idea that whatever changes I make or the differences I invoke on the process has no effect. It's saying nothing happens. The null hypothesis in this case is that it doesn't matter what I do, or it didn't matter what we did to the equipment, it didn't make a difference. Because we want to prove that the difference that actually created an improvement in the yield. The alternative hypothesis is what we want to prove. We want to show that it does create a difference. And so that's the way I think of it anyway. So if I'm going to go down to some equipment and I want to run an experiment saying, oh, if I set this at this dial B at 10, it will make an improvement. Well, my null hypothesis is the status quo reigns supreme and nothing really changes. And that's typically how the null is set. So I'm going to say the yield will stay the same is my null hypothesis. And the alternate hypothesis is that it improves, the yield goes up. Now, the alternate hypothesis is usually the contrary to whatever the null is. All right, so we set up the experiment. We've got our null and alternative hypothesis and working some examples and stepping through some of these tests, and we'll do that in the future lessons. These terms will come more naturally. So the critical value is kind of the decision point. So if I do see a change, is it enough of a change to be not just a random variation because of it's a sample? So I want it to be enough of a change. So the critical value is what we calculate to determine the deciding point, whether it's just likely to be just chance that we saw the slight difference from the null hypothesis, or is it enough of a change that it actually is a significant change, that it's got convincing evidence that it's different. So the test statistic is based on the data. We go do some calculations based on the data, depending on what kind of hypothesis test we're running, and then we're going to compare that to the critical value. So if our test statistic is greater than the critical value in most cases, then we can infer that there is really a difference, that changing the dial B to 10 actually resulted in a higher yield. That's great. The last step is communicate that, whether it's a report or a memo or a presentation or whatever it is. But let's capitalize on that knowledge that this change we made actually made a difference. So let's go over a few more terms before we dive into the confidence or the hypothesis test in more detail. So the basic idea is the null hypothesis is this is the status quo, that changing this dial, for example, doesn't make a difference, that the result will be the same as what I would expect normally. Basically, it's saying that the distribution of the results hasn't shifted, whether it's the variance or the mean value or some other parameter that we're measuring, that it stays the same. Typically, now, like I mentioned earlier, it doesn't have to be. It's just, this is the part that if the experiment doesn't result in a significant change, everything will be like it is before. Now, keep in mind that we're not proving the null hypothesis. When we set up the test and it shows that there's not enough evidence to conclude that there is actually a change, that the alternative hypothesis is true, that's not the same as proving the null hypothesis is correct. The test is really only focused on, is there enough evidence that there's something different than our null hypothesis? But the contrary is not true. So there's not evidence that the null hypothesis is true. We would have to reverse our alternative and null in order to test that and set up a different set of tests. So the test statistic is what we calculate. And we'll go over a number of formulas to do that. But that's compared to our critical value in order to judge whether there's sufficient evidence that the null hypothesis is not true. All right. Errors. Now, previously, like with confidence intervals and a few other times, we've mentioned confidence. In practice, I think everywhere we've mentioned it so far has been a type 1 error or the alpha type confidence. Now, the alpha is the, make sure I always have to look this up to make sure I get it right. All right. So type 1 error, and that's alpha. And type 2 error, we typically use beta. So let me get my pen up. Is the error that results when the null hypothesis is rejected when in fact it's true. Okay? So this is when I get a result here and I set a type 1, I set my confidence at 90%. Alpha is, remember that alpha equals 1 minus the confidence. So if I want 90% confidence in my confidence intervals or in my setting up my hypothesis test, I'm also saying that the alpha is 1 minus C. So in this case, 0.10. So I have a 10% chance in running a test, say a hypothesis test, that if the null hypothesis is actually true, and I have a 10% chance that I will reject that, making the false conclusion that the alternative is true. All right, let me say that again. We don't know if the null hypothesis is actually true or not. In the contrary, we don't know if the alternative hypothesis is false or true. But let's say the change we made with the equipment does not really affect the results. But I see some change. And I have a 10% chance, based on that sample, drawing from the no change of the distribution, that it would reflect that there actually is a change, and I would accept the alternative hypothesis or reject the null. All right? So this part where the null is true and we reject it is also called the producer's risk. So alpha or producer's risk. Oops. Okay. Now, beta is very similar type of error, but it's called the consumer's risk. Just abbreviate it. And that's where we basically are saying that we have a we do see the experiment does create a real change. The alternative hypothesis is true. We have enough evidence to say that the null hypothesis is false, but because of sampling error, we do not have enough convincing evidence to recognize that. And so we fail to reject the null hypothesis. So even though there really is a change, because of random sampling of the data that we collect, it's not sufficiently, it doesn't change the test statistic enough to cross that critical value threshold. So it's called a beta or consumer's risk or type 2 error. Now, I also often joke that there's a type 3 error, and it's running a perfect experiment on exactly the wrong thing. So that first step, remember, of planning, you know, what's the problem and then setting up your experiment is critical, because you can do these calculations and get them all exactly right, but it's on the wrong problem. So that's a subject of a whole nother course, I think. So alpha and beta fill in two of these blocks. Now, on occasion, we get it right, and that's where this confidence comes in. So we want to have 90% confidence, for example, which would be an alpha of 0.1, where the null hypothesis is true, we shouldn't reject it, and we conclude correctly that we don't reject it. And so we typically set that, and we call it in generically confidence. And then there's also the 1 minus beta. And that's where we make the correct decision to say that there's convincing evidence that the alternative hypothesis is true. So the null hypothesis is false and we reject it. This is also called the power of the test. You'll hear that term occasionally. and it deals with how fine of a resolution the experiment has. Now, there's also this other concept, and let me touch on that, is the one-tailed and two-tailed tests. So let's say I have I'll just draw a couple not quite random normal, or not quite standard normals, but three different distributions. So I can set up a hypothesis test to say that the change I'm making to the equipment will have no effect, so that the old mean value that I got for yield will remain the same, so that the yield will remain the same. Now I can test that did it just change? Is there any change whatsoever? And in that case, I'm often then saying, is it moved enough to convince me that it's not the same anymore in either direction? It could be a higher yield or a lower yield in that particular case. And that's called a two-tailed. And that's because I'm dealing with the values on both sides of the distribution. Now, if I want to test that it's only changed lower, I'd use the lower tail. And if I'm only interested that it's improved or gone up on, let's say, some number line, then I would use the upper tail. And those are called one-tailed tests for obvious reasons. So part of it is understanding which direction you're going. So take a look at in the notes and in your reading, the different formulas for alternative hypothesis. And some are less than, some are greater than. Those are one-tailed tests. And some are, it's just different. It's not equal to. Not equal is a two-tailed test. It'd be a couple of different terms and ways to look at these things. Now, this matrix here, this alpha and beta and the various ways they put together, is something to work through and think through each time you do a hypothesis test, and where are you working at? What's the numbers you're dealing with? And thinking through it. Now, I've been using this for over 20 years. I still have to look it up every time. So for me, when I took the exam, I just knew where this reference was and made sure I thought it through so that I was setting up the experiment correctly or interpreting the results correctly. Now, it doesn't help that there's three different ways of phrasing these things and some variations of it. So you may see it presented in different ways, but it essentially is just saying, do I have convincing evidence that the null hypothesis is changed or not? And that's the alpha and beta. All right, get rid of the... So one of the questions I hear pretty often is when I'm setting a confidence, and I'm setting it for confidence intervals or setting it for one of these hypothesis tests, and I've often heard of 0.95 or 95% or 99% or 90%. And I've also heard of 60%. I see that on component vendor data sheets oftentimes when they cite some testing they did. They'll say reported at a 60% confidence. Now, it's just part of the formula. But is there a lower limit to where it doesn't make any sense anymore? So I'm going to leave that one hanging and think through that. What does confidence mean? And what does that limit mean? And no pun intended here, but how do you interpret that? And how low can you set a confidence? Because the lower the confidence, the fewer samples you need. So there's going to be significant cost and logistics pressure to limit the number of samples. But what happens if you set it too low? What happens to the results that you're looking at? All right, in the next one, we'll take a look at some of the starter hypothesis tests, where we're looking at means, the mean values or average values, that as the first parameter that we're interested in.